enjoyed about 2 centuries of greatness, then went into decline, decay, and collapse. But there were symptoms of decay during that second century of greatness. Vast increases, for example, in the number of idle rich and idle poor. The latter, the idle poor, were put on a permanent dole, a welfare system very similar to our own. And as that welfare system became permanent, the recipients organized themselves, formed a union, became a political bloc with considerable power. Rome's government bowed to pressure from this welfare army. Would-be emperors catered to them. The great solid middle class was taxed more and more. And then there was an income surtax. And then the denarius, a silver coin very similar to our half dollar, had its silver content reduced and became copper colored. This is ancient Rome I'm talking about. And then silver coins disappeared altogether. Military service had been an honored tradition in Rome, but young men began avoiding service, took to using cosmetics, wearing feminine hairdos and garments. Among teachers and scholars, many let their hair and beards grow, wore slovenly clothes, professed indifference to worldly goods. Morals declined. It became unsafe to walk countryside or city streets. Rioting became commonplace. Sometimes whole sections of campuses, towns, and cities were burned. And finally, when confiscatory taxation and creeping inflation overcame energy and ambition, the result was stagnation and decline, and Rome passed into what history has recorded as the Dark Ages, lasting 1,000 years. And the United States may not survive. That's right. The United States may not survive. But there is something even more important than that. I do not believe that Almighty God will preserve this promised land any more than he preserved the previous ones if its people are determined to destroy it. You see, nations are used of God as long as they serve his purpose. And whenever they turn from him to worship other gods, he lets them. He lets them. United States of Americans mouthing platitudes about freedom have, I think, obscured the meaning of America. Americans never came to this country in the first place to be free, to do what they want, but to be free to do what they ought. And there is an important difference. They prayed, "Oh God, give me freedom to do whatever I want to do in this wonderful land of the free." They did not. They prayed, "Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth." They bound themselves to his will, and then is when, in an instant, as historical time is measured, a couple of hundred years, our little 6% fraction of this planet's population came to possess more than half of all the world's good things. For after all, we'd had his written promise that believing on certain things, all else would be added unto us. And so it came to pass. But then we came along, demanding to be free. Well, we're free. We're as free as a drifting balloon, free as a driverless car, as free as a train without a track. We have no idea where we're going, but we're free. The day we turned from him to worship idols, it was that day that we were set upon by truce breakers and troublemakers and cirrhosis of the liver. America is not a way of worship. America is a place of worship. Americans, when they were obedient to the laws of God, led this world. Now look who's threatening our lead. Lacking dynamic purpose, we're being outdistanced by heathen hordes who have nothing but purpose. We may have the strongest guns, but they have the strongest goals. In a lifetime, a third of the earth has been conquered because what we have in our hands has been no match for what they have in their hearts. And that's why I'm not sure the United States will survive. I do believe it could, but it would have to get back on the track. And I mean individually and collectively, we'd have to turn aside from compromise and stop expecting laws piled on laws are going to provide salvation by legislation and revert to obedience to the basic 10. Every God-fearing American would have to really fear God again. And I mean stand up and be counted a powerful priesthood of the laity, men who know where they're going, men who are examples worth following because they are following an example worth following. And with such men to show the way, God will again lead America, and Americans may again lead this world to new heights. But all other directions are down. You are on a spaceship, and your spaceship is in trouble. Now, how can we turn the world right side up again? I say get back in contact with the builder of the spaceship and reread his directions. You know, ours is not the first emergency aboard this orbiting satellite, and it does not have to be fatal. But students of history are scared because they've read the record, and they know every great nation state has died by suicide. Each of them enjoyed about 150 years at its zenith and then rotted away. Because it was a good government, it bore bountiful fruit, and the people got fat, and when they got fat, they got lazy, and when they got lazy, they began to allow moral and social and cultural and economic decay to set in, and the nation just rotted away. Rome, Spain, Greece, China. The American Empire has enjoyed about 150 years at its zenith. Apparent symptoms indicate that we are Sodom and Gomorrah, overripe, rotten, and ready to follow those other nation states into history's graveyard. And the communists are convinced of this, you know. They reason that capitalism replaced feudalism because feudalism had become corrupt and inefficient. They figure communism is going to now replace our capitalism because capitalism has become corrupt and inefficient. And they've led some Americans to believe that we're in the last stages of decay. And some who've studied Rome's decline and fall are convinced of it. But worse, so many feel utterly helpless to do something about it. Well, now, Tulsa, Oklahoma publisher Jenkin Lloyd Jones recently reviewed the symptoms and prescribed a remedy for what ails us. He says if America should go down real soon, it would be too early. And he reminds us that at least twice in history, our British cousins have been in a fix just like this. They appeared headed for a collapse of principle. That's what it amounts to, isn't it? A collapse of principle. But twice, they drew themselves back upright again. The British courts reached an advanced stage of corruption under the Stuarts, but you remember what happened? The people rebelled? When the people reached the stomach-turning point, they rebelled. And in the wild days of George IV and William IV, it appeared as though Britain were rotting out again. But the people rebelled, and they banged through the reform laws, and under Victoria, Britain went onward and upward to an unprecedented peak of power and prestige. Americans, what do you say? In this year of crisis, in this hour of fear and confusion and self-doubt, what do you say that we let history record that the American people rebelled? Oh, but you say we, the believers, are so few. We always were. But let me tell you, BYU, already you have changed the complexion of much of the West and some of the rest. All you have to do is just keep on keeping on in the tradition of those graduates who have preceded you. Let's let some future Gibbon, let's let some... Let's decide right today that we're going to let one of those historians from way out there on a pinnacle of history yet unreached look back upon this time and this place and record that right here, beginning with you, the silent majority reached the stomach turning point and began to return righteousness to politics, began to revitalize educational institutions, stop demanding wages without work, stop defending union goonery and artistic fakery, and they began again to call a bum what he is, a bum, and junk what it is, junk, and dirt what it is, dirt, and sin what it is. Thin, and starting in this springtime of a brand new, unused decade, Americans, uncompromising, unafraid, uncommon Americans, standing on their toes, reaching for the stars, went on to such heights as no peoples on earth had ever seen before. Good day.
Mr. Harvey. We wish to thank you for that inspiring, encouraging address to one of the finest graduating classes to which you could speak. Appreciate very much those kind words, those encouraging words, and I'm sure that you as graduates and those of your friends who are here today have again committed themselves to do those things which will help to make this country and the world the kind of place in which we would like to raise our families.